December 1st is the rough target date each year for the opening of the Dungeness crab season in the Pacific, but it didn't open until mid-January this year and may open even later next time around. Frustration with ocean conditions has produced a lawsuit by fishing groups. They're taking the fossil fuel companies to court. The Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association says the practices of the fossil fuel industry have led to the ocean conditions now damaging fisheries. Glenn Spain from PCFFA talks to us about the suit and the strategy behind that. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, let me ask the first question. If people have not heard of your organization, what is the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations?
Well, we are the largest trade association of family fishing operations in the West Coast. Basically, roughly about 1,000 boats in our fleet throughout the West Coast U.S., and mostly family fishing operations, owning their own boat, usually crewing it with their family members or local people they hire. And we land seafood. We help create the seafood that is marketed all around the West Coast and internationally. We harvest it in the ocean. So we are very dependent on the ocean and the ocean conditions.
You talk a lot about climate change in general around the world, but of course it has to be localized to specific conditions. What changes are you seeing either now or foresee in the near future in terms of climate change and how that's going to impact Pacific fisheries?
Well, we're on the water all the time. We are very sensitive to what's happening in the ocean. We are constantly monitoring it. Of course, ocean conditions change, but they've been changing in the last few years in very unfortunate and unusual ways. In 2015, for instance, we wound up losing most of our crab fishery. Our season was closed because of a huge blob of warm water off the coast of Oregon and California, when they actually called it the blob. And what that water, hot water did, very unusual, what it did is it created a massive algae bloom of toxic algae. And these are toxic algae that are there normally, but not in that kind of time, not in that kind of time frame, not in that massive a scale. They led to a toxin called domoic acid, which gets into the food chain, particularly at the top of the food chain, and that's where Dungeness crabs are. And so it makes them impossible to catch, to harvest, to sell, to eat. It's a toxic neurotoxin. And we always wait until after that's gone. We test for it, but the test always came up positive well into the season, and we had a closed season. That cost our people and our coastal communities well over $100 million in damages. And we're seeing that kind of thing as, unfortunately, becoming more and more common, and it's becoming the new normal. And the reasons for it are pretty clear. The ocean is warming. And why is the ocean warming? Well, you trace it right back to greenhouse gases being mass-produced in bulk, millions of tons of CO2 in the air from fossil fuels. And it heats up the earth, and 93% of that heat goes into the ocean. The ocean is a huge heat sink. That's why we're seeing conditions off the map more and more often in ways that are destructive not only to the ocean ecosystems, but to the people like ourselves who depended on that for our livelihoods.
And some people have actually suggested that we should be using the ocean as a heat sink to deal with climate change. What is your perspective on that as a fisher person?
Well, that's insanity. When you think about it, what we're doing is something we can prevent. We can work around it if we use our resources to take the ocean, which, by the way, is the major source of the world's oxygen, and poison it and eliminate the food source for billions of people is insanity in its worst form.
If you have a question this morning about Pacific fisheries or a comment that you'd like to make, a reminder that you can join our conversation by calling 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Jeff Exchange. You folks have filed a lawsuit. Tell me a little bit about the specifics of that, who it's aimed at, and what you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, we filed in the Superior Court of the State of California, and a nuisance, strict liability, and negligent product, negligent failure to warn set of complaints. We filed it in state court because the state courts are a court of general jurisdiction. The federal courts are not. The federal courts have limited jurisdiction. And this is a matter of basic fairness. The fossil fuel industry, first off, they knew that this was likely to happen 50 years ago. They commissioned their own studies. Their own scientists warned them of potentially catastrophic, that's quote-unquote potentially catastrophic future events as a result of climate change caused by their greenhouse gases and their fuels, and did nothing about it. Under standard law that's been in development for over 500 years in the English common law brought into America under our common law system, when you do something and it damages other people's property or livelihood, you're liable. It's a nuisance. If you do something knowingly that will damage others, that's also actionable, and that's a ground for liability. So we brought in and are suing more than 30 different companies and basically a large portion of the fossil fuel industry that operates in California, and they produce collectively more than 15% of the greenhouse gases from fossil fuel combustion in the world. So we've got everybody listed. And we will sue them all because they're all culpable and they're all liable for a situation of deception and obfuscation. And many of them contributed to or participated in a $1 billion campaign to deny and to prevent regulation.
Are you asking for both specific damages and particular changes?
Well, we're asking for basic fairness. We have been told many times that we can adapt or have to adapt to climate change. The question is, who's going to pay for it? Do the people who are suffering, the victims of this, have to pay for it? Or should the companies that created the problem pay for it? We are looking at potential damages here and potential ways of shifting the cost of our adapting to these kinds of conditions to the people who actually caused it, and that would be the fossil fuel industry. Again, 50 years of knowing this was happening, they were adapting their own physical plan, their own infrastructure for climate change, raising platforms, moving things upshore because they knew and projected of ocean rise because of climate change. But again, deceived the public time and time again, and all these documents are clear, and many of them are cited in our complaint.
We have a person who sent us a question from Eureka, and they were asking, what are the prospects of the fishing industry with the rise of ocean acidity?
Oh, that's a serious problem. That's called climate change's evil twin. There's no way around the fact that if you put carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and it combines with seawater, it makes the oceans more acidic. Most people don't realize the oceans today are 30% more acidic worldwide, 30% more acidic than they were 150 years ago. That disrupts the ability of shelled animals to make shells. That disrupts food chains. That disrupts migratory patterns, and it has consequences that we're not even aware of because the research is still being done. But it's very scary, and that, again, is one of the reasons we're seeing changes in the ocean all up and down the coast. And again, that tracks directly to the fossil fuel industry and their continuing use of a product they knew was dangerous without any effort to warn the public.
Is it already too late for some species?
It may be. The ocean acidification we're seeing today is primarily the result of carbon dioxide that went into the atmosphere nearly 50 years ago. It gets absorbed into the ocean, becomes carbonic acid. It falls into the lower levels of the ocean and then comes up in the cold water as upwellings over a period of decades. So what we're seeing today is the impact of what's already been done. We do not know what it's going to be like, but it's going to be worse in the next 50 years. The real question is, what do we do about it now? There are things that we can do to adapt. And the real question for our industry is, who's going to pay for it? And we believe it should be laid at the feet of the people who caused the problem and then lied about it.
You know, we've been talking about the fish and the shellfish, the potential damage to them, but are we also looking at more violent storms in the Pacific? Is there a danger to the people who are out fishing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Scientists now are able to tease out, in recent hurricanes, to tease out the component of those hurricanes that is derived from climate change. Better able to do that. It means, basically, there'll be more violent storms more frequently, and they'll be longer lasting and damage not only the oceans and anybody in the oceans, but the land as well. We saw the recent hurricanes in Florida as perfect examples. The year before that, we had a massive record hurricane in Texas. All of that was exacerbated by climate change.
Marie is on the...
Hurricanes happen, but they're going to be very, very much worse as a result of the ocean warming that's, again, directly tied to greenhouse gases and the climate change caused by the industry.
We have Marie calling from Eureka, and she has a question about crabbing season. Go ahead, Marie.
Yes, what are the prospects for this crab season in terms of carbonic acid, and what about future crab seasons?
Well, carbonic acid is tested for rigorously, and we insist on that as well as the health agencies, so nothing goes into the market that isn't safe, ever. But the problem that we have is that we're not clear, based on past history, what the future is going to be, because the future doesn't necessarily look like the past anymore. So we have a process of continuing testing. The seasons open when the agencies say that they're safe, and that's unfortunate that we can't plan ahead, but we obviously have those safeguards in place for good reason.
Glenn, in addition to your litigation that you've talked about, I was on your website and it offered some specific recommendations for things that we can do to prepare for climate change and the impact on the specific. I wanted to ask you about a few of those. One of them was suggested hardening coastal infrastructures. How would that look?
Well, for one thing, if you're at sea level, and sea level is going to rise by several feet in the next 50 years, you better plan a little bit better on where you locate your buildings, where you locate your power lines, where you locate your basic infrastructure. That also is a cost of climate change. That's a cost that people are considering in the state of California, how to deal with that. State of Oregon and Washington are all dealing with that. But a lot of our coastal communities are literally on the coast. And so they're the first people who are going to be paying the price and the brunt of that. Again, this isn't something that they caused. It isn't something they have any control over. It was something caused by the fossil fuel industry, and it is something that they had control over and knew would be a consequence for more than 50 years.
You also advocate for some what you call flexible real-time fisheries management. Is that bringing it back more to a local level?
It is in a way, but also remember that a lot of our fishery management is based on hindcasting. It says the fish have always been there in that particular location by this time. Well, unfortunately, that's no longer predictive. Things are changing rapidly in unknown ways. So what we need is real-time management where we go out and test right that time and make management decisions more quickly so that people can respond to changing ocean conditions. We do that for crabs. We always test the crabs. There's a rigorous set of testing mechanisms in place up and down the coast to deal with that. we don't open until those tests say that the crab is safe for consumption. That's part of what we need to do, but it's all going to cost. All that adaptation, we've been told time and time again by the fossil fuel industry, we'll adapt. Well, the question is who pays for it? And that's what the suit is essentially all about. The people who should pay for the problem are the people who caused it through their defective products and lied about it for nearly 50 years.
In addition to the litigation, are you working with congressional groups or state groups to try to bring about some regulation changes?
Oh, yes. Well, there's the Ocean Protection Council in California, for instance, has a whole program devoted to how to adapt to changing ocean conditions and global climate change. The state of California, state of Oregon, state of Washington all have similar programs. All three states, by the way, are among the leaders in dealing with this worldwide in absence of any effort by the federal agencies and the federal government, which is in deep denial. The states are taking a major role, and multiple cities are taking a major role in reducing greenhouse gases. That's the first thing you do. When you find yourself in a deep hole, stop digging is the basic rule. So we need to reduce, and then we need to adapt to what changes we will be facing. We're involved in, and everyone should be involved in, all of that throughout any of our coastal communities.
We're speaking this morning with Glenn Splain. He is from the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. If you have a question or a comment and would like to join our conversation, a reminder, you can give us a call at 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. As you work to get involved with all of this look at some of the fisheries that are out there, we've been talking a lot about shellfish and things like that. What do you see in terms of salmon runs? Are they being impacted as well by changes in ocean temperature?
Oh, yes, and not only changes in ocean temperature, but salmon, of course, originate far inland. They originate at the top of the watersheds where their eggs are laid. One of the impacts of climate change that we're seeing forecasting is that rain will be more difficult to come by in many already areas. The snowpacks are diminishing in many areas. That means stored water is diminished. So you could wind up with more flooding, which scours the beds where they lay their eggs, and then more drought. Water temperature is in many places near or in some cases above the fatal levels for salmon, which are cold water fish. Their eggs don't hatch and their young don't mature if the water temperatures are too high. We have an active program to try to deal with all that. And we also are doing what we can to restore rivers like the Klamath, which is in the middle of a dam removal project, which will greatly improve salmon runs in that area, nearly doubling the runs projected. In many areas where we have water pollution, and those are all exacerbating factors. We can take care of what we are responsible for. If we do that, we at least give the fish a chance. And then we have to take care of the global problems collectively.
We touched a little bit on this particular subject. The political climate right now is, kind of anti-science. How do you combat that?
Well, actually, the political climate everywhere but Washington, D.C. is pro-science. And the thing about reality is it tends to exist whether you believe in it or not. The areas where the Trump administration or Trump family have properties are going to be heavily damaged, are being heavily damaged by climate change, and that's going to get worse. All the wishes in the world are not going to make that go away. Sort of reminds me of the state back east, I think it was South Carolina, that decided to ban climate change as a matter of law. Well, good luck with that. It doesn't likely succeed. We have to deal with the real world as it is on its terms. And the real world is telling us in no uncertain terms in the last couple of years, especially with record high temperatures all around the world, record fires in California and Oregon, record drought, record this, that we're off the scale, and we better pay attention. The scientists are yelling at us loud and clear. A big warning bell is going off. And anyone who isn't basically convinced that climate change, meteorologists put it this way, anyone who doesn't believe in climate change at this point is saying that they don't believe in thermometers.
That's good. Let me ask you a question. Kind of, we have just a little bit of time left, but
sure.
What can we do locally? What are you folks, and what can other people do in terms of habitat protection? I think we tend to think of that in such a large scale, but you know, it really does come down to individual rivers and shorelines. What can we do?
Well, every landscape is composed of component parts. We protect as many of those component parts, restore as many of them as we can that have been damaged, try to not do any more damage to the ones that we have left. We're blessed in the state of Jefferson with a huge amount of land, which is in still fairly good condition ecologically. Salmon still are produced. We still have vibrant rivers. We have to clean up the problems that we've created, but we are blessed with a lot more than they have in, say, Los Angeles, or places that are heavily urbanized. We have all the pieces, and we need to continue to do what we're doing and support those efforts to pull all those pieces together and weave them back into a watershed that makes sense for fish, makes sense for ecological sustainability.
How do individuals get involved who are concerned about this?
Well, they say all politics is local. Find out what's happening in your local watershed. Most people don't even know where their watershed is or what their watershed is. We need to identify by watershed. And over the years, I've learned to think like a fish. Where does the water come from? Where does it go? We need to ask those questions and find out who's doing what to help make that process better and clean up what pollution there is.
We've been speaking this morning with Glenn Splain. He is representing the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, their effort to protect the fisheries and the ecosystems that are in the Pacific and the rivers that move into that. Glenn, thank you for joining us this morning.